Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week. Now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And welcome, everybody, to Pulse of Fins Nation. I am your host, Lewis Sung. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I am joined by Chad Ronnebaum. And there is no Alf. There is no Eric. Eric is actually at the Florida Panthers game right now. He's, yep, so he got free tickets. So how could I refuse him the opportunity to go and enjoy that? So he's going to be – he won't be joining us today. But I've got Duke. I've got Chad. So we are good. We got plenty of Dolphins knowledge between the three of us here, mostly these two, not me. But that's a different discussion for another time. But for anybody who is not watching the counter, this is actually the 100th episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. So it's a little bit of a milestone for us here. Thank you, Duke. Yes, cheers for that. It's been a while. It's been a long time since we've been started doing this. The show has become, I guess, in a sense, more, let's say, traditional than what it used to be, because at the very beginning, if I don't know if any of you were or around who might be listening to this, how many of you were actually watching Pulse when it first got started? It was like 10 minutes worth of just me reacting in a funny way to different tweets. I would pull them up on the screen. I would have the some canned music from YouTube playing in the background, and my brother would put funny special effects in there just to make it seem more interesting. I don't know. That format, it didn't really stick, but now here we are. Several episodes later, we've got our own show. We got sponsors. We got all sorts of great stuff. So I'm very happy with how things are going, and here's to another 100 episodes.
All right.
So today, this is where we have to kind of really stretch our content creation, right? Because this is where we're going to be talking about, this is the dead time of the offseason. Nothing is happening. We got a little rookie mini camp and everything going on there, so I guess we can kind of talk about that, kind of, sort of. But that's good. That does give us the opportunity to talk about these rookies a little bit more. And my father pointing out in the comment that he loved the original format. I mean, let's be honest, father of mine, you love any format that I'm a part of. So there is that to consider. So we're going to get into all that real quick. But before that, let's just go ahead and talk about our sponsors. First up, we have, of course, PrizePicks.com. PrizePicks.com is a revolutionary fantasy platform where you can pick up to 6 different players across professional sports leagues, whether that's the NFL, the NBA, the MLB, one of each. It's up to you to decide. All you have to do is choose in your lineups who's going to hit the upper or their lower numbers on their stat sheet. So if you think Nikola Jokic is going to go over his 50.5 points, rebounds, and assists, you can go ahead and do that. I personally picked the under on that one. So I'm going to be keeping an eye on that throughout the evening. And of course, once again, by the way, South Florida does have Prize Picks available now thanks to their new arena mode. There's 2 ways to win. You can either win as you can either be the top player in the bracket that they put you in, or you can go ahead and just get entire lineup completely correct. So once again, Prize Picks is back in South Florida. If you haven't already signed up, use the promo code 5, that's FIVE, and they will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. And of course, our newest sponsor, Jerseys 305, will play the video for you. So once again, it's jerseys305.com, and I'm going to go ahead and play the video for you guys now and so you can get a good look at it.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with Five Reason Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And once again, that's jerseys305.com. You can get 10% on your order when you use that promo code 5. So great deal for you if you're looking for a classic jersey, Dolphins, Heat, whatever it may be. All right, so already right off the bat, we have some comments coming in. This one is from Strontium Milks on the YouTube chat. Said that Mo Camara is going to outperform Chop Robinson. So that is the question that I'm posing right now, basically, is which of the Dolphins rookies is ultimately going to make the biggest impact right off the bat? Because the question is not just based on who's going to play the most. If we're basing it off of just who's going to play the most, early on, we've already discussed that, it's probably going to be Chop Robinson, simply because he's going to be the one who's going to be set standing in for the potentially still injured Bradley Chubb, maybe Jalen Phillips. He's going to be getting a lot of playing time early on in the season, where he will likely start to taper off as the older guys end up coming back in. And I say older with air quotes there, because Jalen Phillips is not an old guy by any stretch of the imagination. But with that being said, the question becomes, who is going to make the biggest impact right off the bat? We've been hearing a lot of talk about Jalen Wright, the running back that the Miami Dolphins drafted. We've been hearing that the Dallas Cowboys wanted him and the Dolphins sniped him. So they're not particularly thrilled with that. So now there is a lot to be said about what Jalen Wright can bring to the table. And personally, this is just my opinion. I think that if we're talking about who's going to make the biggest impact, I would say that Jalen Wright is right up there in the running, just simply because I wanted to look up some film just to be able to pull it off and just to show people. But the thing about Jalen Wright that a lot of people are overlooking, because I kept looking up his highlights, right? I wanted to find some proof that of what it is that I was trying to say. But all the highlights, and granted, they were good highlights, is of him running for touchdowns. Cool. Awesome. We know that he can do it. But what I wanted to show off was his pass blocking ability. And we already know that with the offensive line, at least how it's currently projected, any type of pass blocking help that is available will be greatly appreciated. And if there's one thing that Jalen Wright does very, very well, and some people even said he's the best pass blocking running back in the draft, is that he knows how to pass block. So he's going to be crucial to what I believe is going to be the Miami Dolphins offense, just as much as River Craycraft was as a Miami Dolphins receiver, blocking on several of these routes, opening the door for Tyreek and Waller to go ballistic. So I'll go ahead and I will set it up now for you two. I already basically put my vote in. I said Jalen Wright. So I want to hear from you, Duke. I want to hear from you, Chad, and you guys can decide which one of you is going to go first. Who do you guys think is going to be the one who makes the biggest impact thus far? Duke's pointing at Chad. All right, go ahead.
You want me to go? I think it's probably going to be Chop Robinson, although Mo Camara will be in there, simply because I don't think Bradley Chubb will play until the earliest, be around November-ish. And even if he were to come back late October and early November, they're going to limit his workload, I'd imagine. So those two are going to have a lot of starting reps, I would think. Jalen Wright, I get the hype right now. He's fast. I think he's a distant third right now in that running back room. For one, he's a rookie. It's a complex system. And Mike McDaniel typically is a little hesitant to overplay rookie running backs. So unless Raheem Mostert or Devon Achane get hurt, I don't see a lot of touches for Jalen Wright right now. I think the only real change in that running back room is Devon Achane is going to become more of the featured guy. And Mostert will take a few less, especially early in the season. I don't think they're going to work Mostert as hard. Jalen Wright, I get that he's fast. I watched this film, Lewis. I'm not overly impressed. I know a lot of people aren't going to want to hear that, but he's got a nice jump cut. He's fast. I didn't see a guy at all that liked going into contact. He looked like he was always trying to do a jump cut out if their hole wasn't there. And it just doesn't work in the NFL. He's going to have to realize sometimes if, you know, it's first and 10 and you get the ball, there's not much of a hole there. You got to slam in there and make it second and 9. You can't make it second and 12. And so that's something he's going to have to go through as a rookie. He's going to have to learn from Mostert and Achane a little bit. So I think the potential is there. I don't think he's ready to play a significant role in this offense quite yet. He's probably going to be a guy that will start to get more reps maybe halfway through the season. And the primary role of him is to replace Raheem Mostert in the following season, I think, more than anything. He is an accomplished pass blocker, I'll give you that. So he might get some third long work in there as a pass blocker and some dump offs out of the backfield, but he's not going to be the guy getting the first and 10 carries very often. In terms of Kamara and Chop, it's going to be interesting training camp battle. I tell you what, listening to Mo Kamara, he sounds like the attitude I like in a football player. He's pretty chippy. And so I like that.
He's pissed off. He feels like he should have been drafted way earlier. And I agree.
I'm worried about both those guys on their ability to get off blocks. And so it'll be interesting. Now, Chop, using him on stunts and creative blitzes, he's going to be a beast. I mean, that guy is quick off of the snap, like Cam Wake quick. And so he's going to just simply beat some of the offensive tackles around the edge just on his get off. But I'm worried with Mo. I believe he's 6'1", and you got to be really careful in the NFL with these tackles because they will just absorb you. I mean, you're talking about the average going rate for an offensive tackle is like 6'6", 330. You know, that's how big all those guys are. And with those long of arms and that sheer size, you got to be careful not to get in too tight with the tackles because you're just not going to move them. You're not going to bull rush them. And neither one of those players are going to bull rush NFL offensive tackles. They're just not big enough. And so they got to both rely on quickness and high motor energy to make plays. And so, I'm excited about both players. They're both going to get a lot of reps. And I think which one gets the most playing time will come down to who can most effectively set the edge out there in space. So I'm assuming they're going to be hands in the dirt guys, but I don't quite know yet what this defense is going to look like with Weaver. If they're going to be doing some stand up reps and stuff like that as well out there on the edge. But I guess, you know, as a covered right a little bit, but I think it's going to be those two edge players that are going to be the highest impact players right away.
Duke. Well, you guys took all the easy ones, so I'm going to pick one. I'm going to go with Malik Washington. And here's how I think he makes a big impact on special teams. I think you will see him move into a role where he's a core special teams player, at least early on, and may even get some return duties. I think they will rotate in the wide receivers. I think they're going to take some of the snaps away from Hill and Waddle, not a lot, just a few here and there to kind of reduce their workload. And I know they added Odell Beckham Jr., and he's going to take a lot of reps as well, but I think Malik Washington's going to get in there. Now, as far as statistical impact, probably not a lot. But he's going to be fighting for those slot duties, and I think he's going to get on special teams. So I think you can see him get some receiving yards. I think you'll see him get some return yards, and I think he'll be impactful as a gunner and other roles on special teams. So I think that's where he's going to make a lot of hay year one. I agree. Wright's the third guy in the room, and he's going to get some touches. They're going to rotate him in, but he's not going to be a high-volume guy to start with. He's probably going to get, you know, 5 to 10 touches a game starting out. I think the edge rushers just by necessity are going to get a lot of reps early on. But I think that's going to drop off toward the end of the season. They'll be used more rotationally. I think you'll see Chop start the season. I think you'll see the winner of that battle start the season. I think you'll see them rotating. I think I don't know who's better against the run. So whoever's better against the run is going to play the early downs. Whoever's better at the pass. And I think they'll use them, like Chad was saying, in a lot of roles. Where I know at Penn State, Chop would line up in the A gaps and rush from that alignment. So they'll probably use him like that to be disruptive because he's so explosive. So, I think Malik Washington is going to make an impact on special teams. maybe even get a big return that sets the Dolphins up for a win or something like that. So, like I said, you guys took the easy ones. I'm going to pick somebody that's a little different. So we'll go with Malik Washington.
Well, we're not looking necessarily for you guys to pick different people. I mean, let's be honest. Like, who do you think is going to have the biggest impact, for easy or otherwise?
Well, I think special teams is where these guys are going to make an impact because the team is so loaded. I think that the edge rushers have the easiest path to get on the field early and often. I think Jalen Wright's got the easiest path of anybody on the offensive side of the football, barring catastrophic injuries across the offensive line. So, I mean, if two guys go down on the offensive line, Patrick Paul is going to have the most impact just because he's going to play all the snaps. But I think Malik Washington's going to see a lot of reps on special teams, and that's an area that needed improvement. So, you know, again, it depends on what you're looking at. I think he's going to make a big tackle here and there. I think he's going to make some returns. I think by the end of the season, he'll edge Berrios out, and they'll move on from him, assuming he doesn't take the spot away immediately in camp. So, I mean, I think they said they had a role for him when they drafted him, and I'm sure that's probably just coach speak, but I think they do have a way to get him onto the field. And they immediately signed Odell Beckham Jr., so I believe that they have, you know, visions for both of these guys being on the field and making impact plays. I just think, you know, what Chad mentioned with the two edge rushers being smaller guys, and they're going to have some quickness and explosiveness to their game. But, you know, the first, we already know, you know, who we're playing week two. So, Chop against Deion Dawkins. Well, that favors Deion Dawkins, who's a very good tackle, until Chop can prove he can beat these guys. So I think they're going to be in for a little bit of an awakening when they actually get into NFL competition. And then I do think Washington is going to have that special teams impact that will, again, may not show up on the stat sheet, but it will have a bigger impact than people realize.
Well, I want to keep something in mind here, because I know that we are talking about Mo Kamara and talking about how smallish he is. Keep in mind that Shaq Barrett, who is also on the Miami Dolphins squad right now, he was listed, or rather I should say he is listed, at 6'2", 250 pounds. Okay, so he is also not the longest, tallest dude who's ever been out there. You know what I mean? So, and for the past, in 2020, 2021, 2022, Shaq Barrett was considered a top 100 player in the NFL. In 2023, obviously, he basically took the year off, for lack of a better term. A lot of stuff happening with him, and I'm really sorry that he's been dealing with all that. He was considered a really, really good player, and he's not the super-sized player kind of pass rusher. He gets the job done in other ways. So for Mo Kamara, size, I get it, I understand it, but Shaq Barrett didn't seem to have too much trouble with a big beefy offensive lineman that were slowing him down. He did a fantastic job with what he was doing. I'll just read off here very quickly here. I have them up here. 2019 was obviously his biggest year ever. 19 and a half sacks. He was the Associated Press defensive player of the year, or at least he was in that comparison. I'm trying to pull it up exactly because I don't have the exact.
Well, while you're looking at that, I will mention that Chop Robinson's not exactly a small guy. No. I mean, he's smaller for an edge rusher, but he's listed at 6'3", 254, 255, somewhere like that. His arm length is smaller, but not awful. I mean, if you're looking at, like, if you're wanting an edge rusher that's like 6'6", 280, yeah, he's small, but he's bigger. You know, we mentioned his name. I don't know if it was on the show or after the show last week, but we mentioned Micah Parsons. He's essentially a same size dude as Micah Parsons. Although Parsons played off ball at Penn State, they moved him basically as an edge rusher into the pros. So you could see Chop Robinson having a similar type role. The issue, I think, with him is not going to necessarily be size. as much as it's going to be a counter move when those guys, the professionals, know how to handle his speed and can dictate that. Can he throw a counter punch? And I know that was an issue with Jalen Phillips early on in his career. He's developed some counters and has worked out for him. So hopefully he'll learn from these guys and develop those. But early on, he's going to learn. It's like it's not going to be the pure speed like it was in college. These guys know how to handle that. You might get a rep or two on them early. They're going to adjust. So, but he's going to go up against Armstead and Jackson and Kendall Lamb. And these guys aren't all pro tackles by any means at this stage in their career, but they're really good. They know what they're doing. They're going to give him the business, and he's going to learn really quick. So it's going to be good on good, and he'll get there.
All right. So now for me, like I said, I know you guys were doing when you talk about Jalen Wright. Like I know we're kind of like talking about how he's the third guy on the depth chart. There's no question about as far as the depth chart goes, who's going to be carrying the rock more. But when I talk about players having an impact, I talk about the guys who are going to end up being the strongest performers, not the guys who are necessarily going to get the most playing time. Chop Robinson could get a whole lot of playing time. It doesn't mean he's going to leave an impact. For me, this is where I look at Jalen Wright and I say, you know what, based on what it is that he brings to the table specifically. It was Raheem Mostert, I think it was, he was the one who actually suggested this, that there could be like three backfields this year. Like, imagine this. I know that it's like hypotheticals right now because I don't think we've ever specifically seen anything like this right now. But just imagine you have Raheem Mostert in the backfield. You have Devon Achan on one side, and then you have Jalen Wright on the other. Either one of those three guys could easily be the one carrying the football. However, you could also potentially have Jalen Wright going in as a lead blocker for Mostert on the left side. And then if something goes awry, you could have Tua dump off to Achan on the right side. Meanwhile, you got Tyreek and Waddle on either side of the other side of, on the other side of the field. If you're a defender, who exactly are you going to focus on? And that's the kind of concept that I'm looking at here. Because if you're going to double Tyreek, because you have to double Tyreek, and if you're going to cover Waddle, and you have to think about Achan over here, it really wouldn't take him a lot for Raheem Mostert, even without that extra help, to be able to get some good yards as a rusher. Now you throw Jalen Wright in there as a pass blocker, or heck, or as a run blocker even. My bad. Or if you want to hear, do you want to try this out? We could finally have a jumbo backfield, like a really jumbo backfield. Like you got Alec Ingold, you got Jalen Wright, and you got Raheem Mostert, and you just make a conga line of running backs to get that third and one.
With McDaniel, one thing I know for sure Mike McDaniel loves is horizontal stretch on his offense. And so you know for sure you're going to see motion all the time. And usually his scheme is just designed to get the ball into his playmaker's hands. And so where Jalen Wright fits in nicely with this scheme is you're going to see one of multiple people running around in motion. So you might see Jalen Wright run across the formation, you know, and you don't know if they're just going to do a direct snap or a quick pitch to Jalen Wright. And now you've got a 4-3 guy sprinting towards the sideline to try to go around the edge. That creates the horizontal stretch I'm talking about, where if you're a safety or a linebacker, you almost naturally have to start spreading out a little bit because he's faster than you are. And that's what Mike McDaniel loves. And then that's how you open up the running lanes up the middle. That's how you open up the middle for guys like Odell Beckham and Jonnu Smith. I think that's how they're going to use them for Wright. And that'll be situationally. He'll be in here and there. So for Mike McDaniel, he'll probably come out with a wishbone that'll have, like, who knows? It could be Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Devon Achan, and then they'll motion out of it, you know, or they'll run around, and it's just a formation. You really don't know if they're going to run out of it, they're going to pass out of it, those sorts of things. So that's what I like about Jalen Wright, and they'll get him some touches that way in space. What I didn't like on film is, again, I'm not a fan of high runners, and Jalen Wright's a high runner. So J.J. was a high runner too, and he had a lot of success. I like guys when the contact starts to close in that gets their pad level down and goes hard in for some yak. And I love Raheem Mostert about that. You know, he's becoming a legend for his angry runs. He needs Jalen Wright's going to have to get really aggressive at contact. And that's because, I mean, you watch his highlights, like you're watching Lewis. Sure, he runs through an alleyway and just blows the top off the defense because he's so fast. I want to see how he does when the running room's not so easy. And it's not going to be this year. I mean, the Jets probably have the best defensive front in the league. Buffalo's defensive front still very good too. And so we're not going to come in and just run over those guys. There's not going to be alleyways like you saw Jalen Wright's highlights. It's going to be, can you turn a small hole into a 2-yard gain, or can you push the pile for another yard or two, those sorts of things. And so hopefully he can kind of learn on that a little bit on pad level. Cause if you go watch his highlights, he doesn't lower his shoulder a lot. He likes to stay upright, which is a trait I don't like in running backs, but either way, his sheer speed, Mike McDaniel's getting, and I'm sure that's why he couldn't wait to get his hands on him, because it's just another guy that's faster than everybody else on the field. And you're going to see a lot of stretch going on with this offense. It should be a better offense than last year. I mean, I know like it was really good last year, but Odell Beckham is really good in short area spaces, like running slants and stuff like that. And he's going to be a very difficult ask for somebody to cover one-on-one, and you're going to have to. Like, you cannot not cover Tyreek Hill over the top or Jaylen Waddle over the top just because Tua loves that throw. Like, if you put a guy out, if you put Tyreek Hill out in space and they don't have somebody covering the top on him, they throw that 9-route over and over and over on you, and they'll score a lot of touchdowns on it. So these guys like Wright, Achan, Janu Smith, Odell Beckham, they should be getting a lot of single looks, and hopefully that they can exploit those. So to be realistic though, Lewis, I wouldn't expect Jalen Wright to maybe touch the ball more than 3 or 4 times a game, at least in the first half of the season. I just don't know, unless it's special teams. Because honestly, I have no idea what to expect right now on kick return, because they changed everything. The rules are all different now. And so they're trying to make it so you have to return the kick now. Like, they don't want you kicking it through the end zone, really. They want it's kind of set up to penalize you if you don't drop the ball like between the 0 and the 10 and try to tackle the guy. And so I don't know who the Dolphins are going to use. I assume, you know, Barrows will be part of that, but that might be Hill. That might be Achan. I mean, because you got to remember, like, it's not just touchbacks now. These guys are getting their hands on the ball. So you want your really fast guys that are good runners getting that ball. So Jalen Wright may end up in there. Malik Washington may end up in that role, but it's going to be a wild first couple months of the season on kick returns, because there's going to be different approaches from all these teams right now with the rule changes.
Good.
I was going to say, you mentioned the wishbone. You can run a lot of things formationally with 3 running backs and still have a lot of speed and explosiveness with that running back room. Because you think about a heavy package where you have Smith and Smythe at tight end, and then you have Wright, Mostert, and Achan in the backfield. I mean, that is an old formation there.
You could throw Ingold in some of those too.
Yeah, you could do that. And so you wouldn't even have to have a receiver on the field, and you've still got 3 guys out there with 4-3 speed. Not to mention, Smythe is not necessarily an explosive tight end, but you've got Smith, who is known for getting yards after the catch. So you could essentially run 5 routes out of a heavy package and just completely screw with the defense. Or you can run out of it, which, you know, I'm reading the chat here, and I agree. We need to run the ball. You've got the guys to run it. I think they will a little more. But you can run these various formations, and you can do it snap to snap. Like, you could go out there and have, you know, run a four or five wide with running backs or the tight ends or 4 wide receivers, and then turn around the next play and go a heavy package. So let's say you get the ball, it's 1st and 10, and you throw the ball a little quick route, say Odell Beckham, and it's 2nd and 1. And then you come in with a heavy package and you're expecting a run on 2nd and 1, right? Or maybe it's 3rd and 1. But then they decide to pass out of it, and suddenly you've got Achan on a linebacker. I mean, the possibilities are endless. It's going to be really, really fun. If all these guys get on the same page early, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to it. But I agree with Chad. I just think Wright, he's going to get his touches. It's just not going to be a lot. Because they're going to feed – again, Mostert had, what, 20 or 21 touchdowns last year. And then Achan played 10 games or whatever it was and had nearly 1,000 total yards, 11 touchdowns or something ridiculous.
I mean, just not to interrupt you, put it in perspective, Achan was averaging almost 8 yards a carry with over 100 carries. That's unheard of. That's unbelievably – like
that's,
good.
That's video game stuff right there.
Yeah.
So you're going to get those guys the ball until either the other guy behind you forces you to put him in the game, or they take that guy away from you. So, so many possibilities. So.
Well, I will say this just in defense of JHI, and I guess by extension, I'm giving defense to Jalen Wright. With Jay Ajayi, his issue was never how he ran the ball. Like, we watched him, we loved him, we were so excited to see him do what he was doing. Like, he ran high, but he powered through. He was unstoppable for a while, and it was incredible to watch. As Dolphins fans, we loved it. But in Jalen Wright's case, he has something that Jay Ajayi did not have. Cartilage.
Yeah, I know. I'm not anti Jalen Wright. I'm just saying, in the NFL, you can't outrun everybody all the time. You've got to be able to get some yak yards. So I think our primary back's Devon Achan right now. I think they're going to save. They're going to limit the amount of hammering that Mostert takes and try to keep him for later on in the season or maybe some more critical games. Or we know when it's harder to run, Mostert's a little bit better back end there, I think, but he's by far, if you took Wright, Achan, and Mostert, he's the best at getting yards out of nothing of the three, other than maybe Jeff Wilson. And so they'll move it around. So it's, to me, I saw that comment from Ryan. I'm hoping that we do run the ball a little, because we're going to get linebackers have to fall back because the space between the safeties and the linebackers is Tua, Hill, and Waddle just murder people in that space. Linebackers have to stretch out on the outside because we're always running motions across the formation. And we're always going to have probably three, maybe four or five guys on the field that are faster than everybody else on the defense. And so it's going to create a lot of stretch and strain. And so the defense moves back or it stretches out. And that's when we really just need to go back to fundamental football and just slam the ball, you know, off tackle or tackle guard, north, south, because the defense is all softened up. They have to be. They're too slow to not. And last year, I just felt like Mike McDaniel, it's so much more exciting. I think I was saying last show that, you know, when you're up 14 points and it's second and two, just hammer the ball. And no, I'm going to throw a 25-yard out. That's what Mike McDaniel does. And so, like, it's almost like you got to know when you've got the game in hand and be a little bit more conservative with those guys. So I'm hoping we see a little more of that this year out of Mike McDaniel. And it's just not all nonstop. Full gas mode where, you know, maybe you throw an interception that was foolish or you do something you didn't have to do to put the game away.
And you also he needs to realize that sometimes second, you know, a first and 10 and you get a 2 yard gain on first down. That's part of the game. You can't always be hitting these big plays. You can't be looking for the big play. And I think sometimes you just have to, you know, run kind of that old school football and, you know, 3 yards, cloud of dust kind of stuff, and just get those tough yards, even if it's not productive. Because one of the main things is you've got, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, you know, a few years ago with other quarterbacks and other offenses, if it was second and anything longer than like 7 yards, it was essentially a punting down. Because you knew,
I remember watching you tweet that out, Duke. It's like, it was, second and seven after a penalty, punt.
It's like holding on the offense, first and 20. Go ahead and punt. You're not getting a first down. And with this offense, with the explosive firepower that they have at receiver, especially now with Odell Beckham, it could be second and 16 and you get a first. I mean, it's just that explosive. So he needs to be less afraid of getting in there and just running the football, even when you know it's not going to be necessarily a super productive play, because then you get the defense to commit to the run, and then you pass, and you can go over top of them. And now you've got that third option. And, you know, this is, as Eric said last week, it's champagne problems. And I mentioned this on the Finsider this week that, or last week, that it was, people are asking now if the Dolphins have the best receiver trio in the league. And I saw an NFL.com article today that has them as the best receiver trio in the league. And I remember talking ourselves into Brian Hartline being a number one receiver. I remember Jeff Ireland saying, we've got fours, fives, and sixes. We need some one, twos, and threes.
And driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
And I remember those days when we're like, all right, that guy that just that undrafted free agent wide receiver is going to be the next big thing, and it never worked out. And now we're like, Odell Beckham is our third dude. So we've come a long way in that. So they've got the receiving weapons, and I know it's a itch that McDaniel is going to have to scratch, but I think getting the trade up for Wright shows, hey, we're going to also run the ball. And like Ryan said in the chat, a guy that gets 20-plus touchdowns doesn't get that as much recognition as he does. Got to give Mostert some love. And you know, we were talking about it all last offseason. Who are we going to trade for? We're going to get this guy, the Dalvin Cook saga. Then it was the Jonathan Taylor saga. And then Mostert's like, I heard all of that, but then I go out and set a franchise record for touchdowns. So those guys are going to get the ball. How much of that's going to be right, I don't know. But it's going to be fun. I'm just excited because all the weaponry they have, they just have so much. And the guy that's overlooked, and I think, Chad, you were the first to mention this right after free agency, was Jonnu Smith. It's going to be a big upgrade in that room. He's going to be catching passes. He's going to be the forgotten guy on the offense.
He's going to change a lot. He's a really tough cover for a linebacker. So that lot harder to cover than Durham Smythe for your standard linebacker. So he's more of a, you almost have to commit a safety to him, which is really hard to do when you got to worry about Hill and Waddle over the top. And so it should be, like I said, a better offense. And, you know, we might have the best trio, but like when you get to the four, fives, and six like that, the training camp's going to be really competitive. I don't see Tajay Washington making the 53. I think he's going to be a practice squad guy. And it's just because look at it. I mean, River Craycraft's not a bad wide receiver. He knows the system. He's reliable. He's a good blocker. Braxton Berrios he's not a bad player. I mean, he's not a one or a two, but he's still a problem, you know, for people out in space. He's quick.
I'll tell you right now, you can pencil in River Craycraft. Okay. He's not going anywhere.
I agree with you. I think he's probably number six right now. And Malik Washington, I really like. Yeah. I don't know that Ezukama. I mean, to me, he's the odd man out right now just because of the sheer number of players. I mean, he'd probably be a practice squatter, but I don't think you can put Malik Washington on the practice squad. He'll get claimed. He's too talented. No, I liked his film too.
The one thing about Ezukama is he's the biggest receiver in the room. So he gives you a size component that you don't really have. So it's going to be some tough cuts in that room. And some of those guys are going to be picked up. So, you know, I don't think Berrios is subject to waivers. I think once you get like so many accrued years, you're just a free agent. But some of those other guys are going to get picked up. Yeah. And then I was reading, I don't know his name, but he was the undrafted rookie. He's like 5'9". And he ran like a low 4.3.
Of course he did. Really, it's explosive McDaniel.
Explosive jumps. I was like, I mean, who's to say that guy can't go in there and steal some reps? He's probably a practice squad guy, but who's to say he can't go steal those reps? So, yeah, thank you, Jaquan. I don't remember what school, but, man, it's just it's going to be so fun. And then you're looking at the tight end room. You've got Julian Hill, who they kept last year over Saubert, over a couple other guys.
Higgins, that guy they drafted. They let him
go. They drafted Higgins. Okay. And then they got, and then you brought in the guy from Kansas City, Fortson. Mm-hmm. And now I know this may be something later for the show, but you know they did drop the numbers this week, and I'm a big believer that certain numbers just do well in football. and Fortson took number 88. I'm just saying that dude is not only going to make the roster; he's probably going to have a big impact because he's wearing number 88. On the flip side of that.
What 88 are you thinking about,
Patrick? Dude? Patrick, that's just a good tight end number. Okay,
so 88 is a good tight
end. Yeah, Patrick Paul, if you're listening to the show, and I hope that you are, please take a number in the high 70s and get rid of 52. You're hurting your career by picking that number. I'm just letting you know.
It's good to know. Yeah, I don't.
Are you thinking about Danelle Ellerby or something?
I'm trying to think of. 50s is for centers and linebackers. If you're an offensive tackle and you're wearing number 50s, you're getting cut in 3 years. If he switches, look, I'm gonna tell you how this happens. They drafted I can't think of his name. The guy we traded for all them picks. My mind just went blank.
Laramie
Tunsil. What number was he his first year?
Like 67.
He was 67, 68, something, because Terrence Fidey had 78. That was his college number. But he played guard. He played really well at guard because the 60s is a guard number. He moved outside to left tackle the following year, still had the same 60s number, was not as good at tackle. He changed to 78 the year after, became great. It is a thing. I can't explain it. But Patrick Paul, please take number 79 and roll with it.
Got a little superstition here.
I mean, wouldn't you want 78 then so the spirit of Richmond Webb can come down upon him?
I'll tell you what, man.
78.
I mean, he's Richmond Webb still alive, man. Why doesn't he come in and do some
76 was Paul's number in college. So he could take 76, anything from 76, 77, 78, or 79. He's 6'7", 330 pounds. He can't wear a low number. That's just wrong. Yeah. On so many levels, it's just wrong.
I thought Malik Washington and the Mark Clayton 83 looked pretty sharp. I'll say that.
Yeah, and that works. And that, like, and Aaron Brewer took 55 to play center, all pro first year. Let's mark it down.
All right. Imagine if they did that with the throwback jerseys, man. We'd have like 8 Pro Bowlers just from the uniform.
Yeah, I mean that's just that. I'm a big believer in that. Now, look, I like that, and all these guys wear different numbers now. I don't know about Cam Smith. I hope he takes number 9. What not his college number? And I'm not partial to 44 for an edge rusher, but that was Chop's number in college, so I get the transition. But Jordan Brooks wearing 20 is good. David Long moving to 11. Again, he's just going to be a stud now. But Patrick Paul in that 52, I saw that, and I'm like, nah, that's got to change. He's got to be 70s. That's just how it is.
So, Duke, with that in mind – so Gavin Hardinson is like a shoo-in to take Skylar Thompson's job then, right? Because Skylar took back number 19.
See, and I said this today. I think I'm like the only I'm like the only fan that doesn't believe in the 19 jersey curse. I know everybody. I don't know if it started before Ted Ginn or if he was the reason why, but the next guy to have it, I believe, after him that was Brandon Marshall. He only put up like 170 catches, 2,000 yards plus, and 9 touchdowns with some bad quarterbacks in 2 years. It wasn't his fault that they dumped him. The next guy, I think, after that was important was Jakeem Grant. He only set the franchise return touchdown record. He's the all-time leading return touchdown guy in franchise history, War 19. Skylar Thompson had it his first year, had a phenomenal training camp, had a phenomenal preseason. Made the team, got some starts, made the playoffs, got the final win to get into the playoffs over the Jets. He switches numbers and has a bad season. I'm not a thing with the number 19. I think he's going to have a better season this year, better training camp and a better preseason because he switched back to his original jersey number. Just watch.
You never know. I mean, I'll just say if Mahomes wore 19, I'd be fine with it on our team. But
and speaking of also of numbers, and Lewis, you may know this because you're around, you're in that area. Are they going to retire 99 and 54?
I haven't heard anything about it.
They need to. You remember the last linebacker to wear 54 that wasn't Zach Thomas, right?
I couldn't not
tell you.
I remember he was an Iowa guy.
Really?
He only wore
Matt Roth?
He only wore it for like a day in training camp, and the outrage was so bad they made him change it. That was AJ Eads.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He wore it one day, and you can't
wear 54.
He didn't
make the team, I don't think. But yeah.
What year was that?
That'd have been like 5, 6 years ago, probably.
2010.
Okay, that's way before I started covering them in earnest.
Nobody has worn 54 or 99, even as a training camp number that I know of, since then. But they haven't officially retired it. So, look, when I play my Madden franchises and I sign guys, I look for numbers. You can't have the retired numbers, and you can't have 54 and 99. It's just not allowed. Right. I think the team should retire those numbers, though.
Well, I'll say this. So far, nobody else has those numbers that I can tell.
And they won't give them to anybody. That's the thing. But they won't officially retire, and I think they need to.
Give us some time.
If you're listening, Greer, whoever, retire those numbers.
Give it some time. They'll get there. So we're getting ready to head over to the tail end of the show here. So I wanted to quickly talk about this as well. A lot of comments going on in the chat right now. Cap for Life brought up that put Cheetah and Waddle and A-Chain on special teams. Stop being afraid to be great. So basically making the recommendation, make them return kicks and punts. Do not like be afraid that they're going to get hurt. Just speed round real quick. For me, if you're going to throw anybody out there, I don't like Berrios being out there. I also don't like Tyreek being out there. You can throw other guys out there who are just as good and don't have to be like, let me put it this way. I would rather have A-Chan out there than Tyreek or Waddle, because you can replace A-Chan, I think, better than you can replace Tyreek.
And A-Chan, are you talking about kick return? Is that what you're
returning,
talking about?
Specifically returning? Returnings. Yes.
Well, for punt return, I'm Berrios. I don't care about who can return punts. I want somebody who doesn't muff the ball. That's why Jakeem Grant, I would never even let on the field on punt return, because how many times did he drop the ball and turn the ball over? Because that
he scored nothing touchdowns, kills you. Well, Chad, don't take that away from him.
Yeah, but every one you score, you negate. Like anytime you muff a punt, that's the biggest backbreaker in the NFL. So just give me somebody who fields the ball cleanly. I don't care if they return it. Kick returns, everything's different now. And so, like I was just saying earlier, it used to be everybody just kicked the ball through the end zone, right? It was what was it like? 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be a touchback. Very few.
Yeah, returns. People just start walking away from the end zone before the ball even lands. They already know.
But now, so in that case, you don't want Tyreek Hill back there because you're wasting time to get him in the huddle and get on the field because he's not going to return anyway. But now they designed it so that, you know, they move everybody up so you don't have near the collisions, and they try to get you to field the ball. You know, the touchback depends on where the ball lands on the kickoff now, right? If I'm understanding that rule right. So it's designed to want you to have the ball land between like the 10-yard line in the end zone and field it.
Didn't they move it up to if you get a touchback on a kickoff, you start at the 35-yard line instead of the 25?
I don't know. I mean, it might be I don't honestly know the rule that it's brand new.
I want to say that. So,
It's something like that though, but it's designed to want you to return the ball from between the 0 and the 10 and have to make a tackle. And so I imagine most people will have two guys back, but there's going to be all kinds of crazy stuff going on. It'd be reverses and all sorts of weird stuff going on because it becomes a legitimate play now because the people are moved up and the bodies are moving around. So
right, but I feel like there should be some level of self-preservation still. Like, I'm not going to throw Tyreek on kick returns, okay?
Well, and Alf mentioned this on a show several weeks ago. As he mentioned, you know, the Kansas City did that in big games, like in the Super Bowl. They had Tyreek out there fielding.
Okay, but that's right. The Super Bowl, though, dude. There's nothing else after that.
Well, I'm saying if it's the middle of the season, you're playing, you know, the Titans or whoever, and it's not necessarily an important game, so to speak. Yeah, you don't want to do that. If it's week 17 and you're fighting for a playoff or a division spot or the number one seed, hopefully, or something like that, and you need a big play and a guy that can flip the field instantly. Yeah, I'm putting those guys back there.
And don't forget, that's fine, but that's situational. It's not like he's the regular guy.
And don't forget Javon Holland either. He was a returner in college.
If it were me, I would spend a lot of time with Jalen Wright and Braxton Barros as my two returners. Those are the two I play with because one is they're both fast. And two, if either one of them get hurt, it doesn't really impact your game plan. Like what you don't want to do is have Tyreek Hill get hurt on a kick return to start the game. And now he's out, you know, or even if he's not hurt that bad, but he hurts his ankle or something, that completely changes your whole game plan. Jalen Wright gets hurt. You're like, okay, you know, he wasn't going to get that many reps anyway, so that's fine. And but he's obviously fast.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to your point, Chad, they want to force the guy to return the ball and get and then make tackles. I'm fairly certain that Malik Washington broke the most tackles of any receiver in college.
I'd be fine with him back there too. Yeah.
So yeah, again, that's where he's going to make his impact. They're going to see this dude break tackles and get yak, and they're like, hey, we want this guy on the field. He ran a 4.47, so he's not slow. He's a compact. He's short, but he's a compact. He's a stout build.
He's a tough tackler.
Get that guy on returns, and he's a tough tackler. Or a tough tackle, I should say. So yeah, absolutely. I think he makes that impact. He's going to be your return guy. I know everybody's penciling Berrios in for that, but I think if it's that situation where like I need somebody to break tackles, that's your dude.
Well, if it's what I think Miami will do, then yeah, I'm penciling in Braxton Berrios. But I personally, if we have to pick one of the three super speed guys, I'd rather have Achane because I feel like there's more depth at running back that is not going to make as much of an impact. And that's no disrespect to Achane. I know how much of an impact he has. But if you lose Achane, you still have Jeff Wilson in there. He hasn't left. He's still there. You still have Jalen Wright, like we've already discussed. There's options there. But if you lose Tyreek, you can't – all due respect to Jalen Waddle, you cannot replace Tyreek. It's not possible. So I'm not throwing Tyreek out there on returns. I'm just not.
You might see him in a certain – like if it's end of the game.
It's an emergency, that's fine.
Then you're all in, yeah.
We're all in at that point. Like there's no going backwards after this. It's like if you're in the playoffs, it's one and done the whole way through. Right. So if you're going to throw – if it's going to be Tyreek out there, it better be the playoffs. Or it needs to be like the playoffs are on the line, which I'm okay with. But – if it's like Duke mentioned, week 17, who freaking cares? Like, I don't need Tyreek to be the regular kick returner. It's not important. It's not worth it. Other comments here. Let's see. Inday talking about considering the moves in the offseason, feels like McD and Greer's assessment is last season's team would have worked, but injuries derailed them. So find similar players to fill in for the injured. Talking about Jalen Wright as well.
Comment because like Jeff Wilson started the year on IR. Wasn't there a game where he didn't have Mostert or Achane either? It just feels like by we got towards the end of the series, we didn't have backs anymore. So we definitely didn't have those speed backs that help your offensive stretch. So that's, to me, why they traded up for Wright.
There's no question.
I think McDaniel's tired of not having backs.
There was no question that the team – I feel like the team would have worked if there hadn't been just the absolute monstrosity of the injury bug that was last year.
You went into week 18 against Buffalo with a division on the line and you didn't have Mostert or Waddle in that game. So now you had Achane and Wilson. I think Mostert was out that game. Maybe he wasn't. But I know Achane was like the leading carrier for the team, I believe. So you had your two big-time guys that were out. Now you can replace them. You've got a fast rookie in Jalen Wright, and you've got Odell Beckham as your other guy. So if one of those guys misses, you still have some very good talent out there. And I think that was noticeable that Waddle wasn't out there because they're like, well, we're going to take Hill away and just force everybody else. And it was Chase Claypool and Cedric Wilson and that. Yeah. So and you've got Jonnu Smith as well. So.
All right. Last thing we want to talk about before the show's over is we'll get into this real quick. I don't know if you guys noticed, but over the past couple of days, we've had some massive extensions being signed by other teams' players. Mm-hmm. Notably, Antoine Winfield Jr. signed a 4-year, $84.1 million deal with the Bucks yesterday, as of this show's recording on Monday. So this makes him the highest paid safety in NFL history. And of course, we have the Detroit Lions, Jared Goff, signing a 4-year, $212 million contract with the Detroit Lions. So both contracts, you could make the argument, have an immediate impact on some of Miami's guys. Now, I believe I mentioned this earlier on in the offseason when we were discussing who was the most replaceable among the incoming extensions. And I was making this argument. We're talking about why we needed to pay Christian Wilkins. And obviously that did not happen. Miami went a different direction. That's fine. Good for him. He's going to be a fantastic Raider. He fits exactly what they do. They're just a bunch of pirates over there. So they troll people. Wilkins is perfect. But as far as who's the most replaceable of the group, I had said straight up, Javon Holland was the replaceable one. Miami has just this uncanny knack for finding good safeties. And we don't know what Patrick McMorris is going to be like. Maybe there's another diamond in the rough there. But if you think about it, if Antoine, I know that the numbers don't compare. They really don't. Antoine Winfield Jr. has accomplished much more than Javon Holland has, in my opinion, as far as just raw numbers. Okay. So, but as is always the case when it comes to the market and whatnot, when a player gets paid a big contract, suddenly the market is now reset. The new precedent is there. So here comes Javon Holland. He's going to be looking for a contract. He's going to point at Antoine Winfield Jr. and say, hey, that guy got 4 years, $84 million. I want $85 million. If I'm Miami, and again, this is no disrespect to Javon Holland, I'm not giving that much money to a safety. I'm just not. Like, it just because, like, all this time, safety has been devalued. It's been easily replaced. We see veteran safeties get cut every single year because they're too expensive. And by too expensive, it means they're making $10 million. So, and they're good safeties. These guys aren't trash. These are good safeties that are getting the boot because the teams have decided, you know what? You're replaceable. If Javon Holland is going to push for like $20 million this year, I'm going to say, you know, thanks for your service. Good luck. But I'm not going to have Miami sign that extension. I feel like Miami can go elsewhere with him.
I think he's going to do.
Oh, go ahead, dude.
I was going to say, I think he's going to excel in this scheme. I think he was not really showcased as well in previous schemes. I think with what we kind of expect Weaver to do and what we saw with some of the players that Baltimore used, and they were very secondary centric. And a lot of their secondary players got a lot more snaps than other defensive players, including the defensive line, which I think is why they were like, yeah, we'll let Wilkins walk. We'll replace him with guys who are just going to be in a rotation. So I think if Holland doesn't have necessarily a huge year this year, then I don't know that he's going to be looking for that big extension. But if he comes in and has like, you know, seven picks and is like all over the field doing all kinds of crazy stuff, yeah, then yeah, it might be worth it. So. We'll just have to see with him.
Would you pay? Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead, Chad. Chad, go ahead.
I kind of think they're going to extend Holland in after June, after the Xavier Howard money hits. But would I pay him what they did Winfield? No, I would not. But he is going to get a substantial contract offer. You know, it'll be in that ballpark, I would think. I think they're really high on him. But you have a really valid point. I mean, when there's a guy like Justin Simmons looking for work right now, how much difference is there between, you know, Javon Holland and Justin Winfield? And I don't know. I mean, safety, there was definitely some quality names out there looking for work. And we got Poyer for practically free. Now, I know he's 33, but I mean, still, he was like, what, $1 or $2 million a year? And so it's a really difficult market right now. And teams value things different. Like, Robert Hunt, for example, like what Carolina did, I would not spend the money the Carolina Panthers spent on guards. I mean, it's just one of the easiest positions to fill. No disrespect to guards, but there's a lot more guys out there that are 6'3", you know, 280 to 300 versus the 6'6 guys out there.
I disagree with that initial statement that guards are easy to find. They are not, because Miami still hasn't found any.
Well, maybe they don't buy enough, but you don't put that much of your cap into your guards than what the Panthers did. I mean, you got to have good D-backs. You got to have good offensive tackles and defensive ends and just players that are more expensive and harder to fill. And you only have so much cap space. So I, you know, the Holland one's very difficult, but I do think they're going to get something done in, with Holland, and they'll keep him here. Cause it's one of those things where he's probably a top five safety in this league, but he's not really recognized that right now. Because he's not as big of a name out there maybe, but, in terms of the Goff one, that's reality right now for anybody for Tua. If you think they're going to get Tua at $40 million a year, they're simply not. I mean, the average quarterback right now, like a Kirk Cousins or a Jared Goff, those guys are in the 50s right now. So that would tell me Tua is going to be probably, you know, mid to high 50s at the cheapest right now for what he's going to get per year. And that's the market. That's the market for a decent quarterback, not an elite quarterback. So, and Tua is somewhere between decent and elite, you know, so we'll see where he falls in at. But I have to think that the Tua deal is going to get done is, you know, in June after that Xavier Howard money hits. And then once we have the framework of that Tua deal, then you know what you have to go fill the rest of the team out. You know, maybe you extend Javon Holland, maybe you extend Jalen Waddle. And those are two names that you can look at, because if you do it now, then the player typically should be willing to play ball. And so Javon Holland, maybe he'll take like a $65, $70 million contract right now and not risk having a severe injury next season and then not getting any of that big money. And so if Javon Holland wants to bet on yourself, per se, as Chris Greer would put it, then next year they'll just have to decide whether or not they want to tag him or not in the negotiations. So we'll see on that. But valid point, Lewis. I really don't know what to offer Javon Holland in this market.
I would pay him $13 million a year max.
He
won't take it. No, but no. But again, that's what I'm saying. Is like there are a bunch of safeties out there looking for work.
Well, I take that back. You won't get that unless you have a significant chunk of it in guaranteed money. Then he might. But you're going to have to guarantee it 3 or 4 years at that rate, at least, for him to take that.
I'm looking at look at the safety market. That's all I'm saying. Like Antoine Winfield Jr. This whole concept of one player setting the market for everybody else. Like just because Tampa Bay decided to massively overpay their safety. Like I'm not trying to take away anything from Winfield Jr. in a vacuum. He's a very, very, very good safety, arguably top three. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. But he's top three. He's Antoine Winfield Jr. That's different. Javon Holland,
no, he
said top five. Like, I honestly, I would, me personally, and this is just coming from me, I would struggle saying top five Javon Holland. He hasn't performed.
Maybe. I don't five. Think he's going to look to set the market. I think he's aware of that. But at the same time, he's going to want in the framework of that contract. That's what he's going to look for. If you're not at least in the ballpark of that kind of contract, he'll just wait. Because I don't know how old Javon Holland is, but he's got to be like 24 or something like that. So he's preparing for his second contract. So
he's 24 years old. He turned 24 this past March.
Yeah. So his next contract is his money. That's where you make your money.
Like I'll put Javon Holland in top 10. I'm not putting him in top five.
So. Yeah, I would agree with that. The question isn't Javon Holland. It's how much do you pay a top 10 safety of your cap? Like I'm making the point where I don't put a huge amount of money in the guard position. Is that the same with the safety? Do you just not put the money? You don't put big money into running backs. You don't put big money into guards. Do you not put big money into safeties? And that's a real question right now in the NFL.
The question for Holland is going to be, if you pay him that money, how do you transition away from the other big money contracts on defense? And I think they've maybe started with that with the edge rusher group. Assuming the two rookies hit, you've got two guys that will be replacements for Chubb at some point. You figure they're going to extend Jalen Phillips. We're going to assume these guys are healthy and all that good stuff. So you don't really have a lot of necessarily expensive contracts in the secondary, with the exception of Jalen Ramsey. So, and again, he's an older player. If you extend Javon Holland, that contract wouldn't kick in until next season. Do you say, well, we'll pay him a lot of money, but then we're going to go with a lot of cheaper contracts, aka rookie contracts, at the corner position in years down the road, so that his cap hit is alleviated instead of having to pay, you know, a $20 million corner?
So, if I'm dealing with Javon Holland, I'm probably offering him in the range of 40 to million, maybe 45 million of guaranteed money. So, you know, maybe he's going to get a $20 million signing bonus over 4 years, and then you're going to pay him like maybe $1 million on his first year of his contract because he just got that big check. But somewhere in that range of that 40, 45 million over 4 years. So you're, if he'll do that, then I'm interested in playing ball because you can just spread that out over the contract, which I'm comfortable doing. I know he was injured last year. You know, half our team guy, I swear, hurt the freaking MetLife turf. He was one of those guys. But other than that injury, he's been a pretty healthy guy. He's 24. So I would like to think that a four-year contract on Javon Holland would come through most of the way. I mean, that'd be at the 27 or 28 range. So that's what I would do. But
and they're moving with the void years and stuff too. So you could say a 4 year deal, put some void years on the back, so that at some point he will be a big contract, but it'll be toward the end of it, and you've got corners on rookie deals, so your secondary is not so loaded at two different positions. It's one thing to pay, you know, two corners like we had last year with Ramsey and X, these big contracts, and have a big safety contract in there as well. Yeah. It's kind of like what you're talking about with Carolina. Had they gone out and got Robert Hunt, well, that's fine, $100 million deal. Then they signed Damian Lewis for had a $53 million deal. So you're putting $153 million into two guards. And then they extended their defensive tackle. So you took three interior linemen and you're paying them close to $250 million in contracts.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the guarantees look like, but is that what Chad said? Is that a good allocation of funds? So I'll pay Javon Holland if I can get some of these cheaper deals at other positions, at key positions. So yeah, go into next year and draft a cornerback in the first round, and you have Cam Smith who's on a rookie deal, assuming he does what we expect him to do, and then you have a rookie corner, you have Kendall Fuller who's not very expensive, and you're transitioning away from Jalen Ramsey, so that when Javon Holland's contract is hitting and you've got this big cap number, you've got cheap corner contracts, and then you'll transition away from him and pay your corners, and it's just a cycle. I think for Tua, right, I'm going to go 5 year, $255 million.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's what's holding everything up is the Tua contract, because you got to get that deal done to know what your cap space is. But, I mean, the reality is there, the big ones coming off the book are Chubb's maybe going to be here 2025 at the longest. He may not be. I mean, they can save cap space next year by letting him go. I mean, he'd have a nice chunk of dead too, but Bradley Chubb's probably going to be on the team for 2024, 2025. He'll be gone. The same goes for, I think, for Tyreek Hill. I think after the 2025 season, he'll also be going. And Tyreek's money is going to go to Waddle. That would probably be the plan. And
just for the sake of argument, Chad, Bradley Chubb, if you cut him post June 1st, you get $20 million in cap savings and only less than $10 million in dead cap. So
that's at, oh, for June 1st cut for 20 after this season, you mean?
For Chubb, yeah, 2025. Yeah.
And so, depending on where they're at, that wouldn't surprise me that Chubb's going to go, because you've brought those younger guys in. This is Armstead's last year. Patrick Paul's slotted to replace him, which I think from a cap standpoint is great. I mean, that's offensive tackles are premium. And so you have to look at the NFL and say, all right, if I don't have the guy drafted on a reasonable deal, how do I fill those slots? And corners are really expensive. You want an elite corner, they're expensive. Offensive tackles and defensive ends, all three of those positions are really expensive and hard to get elite players at in free agency. So if you can build those positions in the draft, you almost have to if you're going to play the quarterback, because Miami's days of having cheap quarterbacks now over. You know, the Tua's rookie deal is passed. And so I think what Greer's been trying to do is fill in some of those other expensive positions, i.e. defensive end and offensive tackle, at positions that we can have on rookie contracts when Tua's money's on the books.
All right.
We're going to go ahead and call it here. Everybody, thank you all so much for listening. By the way, for anybody who has not already done so, if you need a good place to actually talk some Miami Dolphins football without the Twitter discourse, you can go over to discord.gg/OnlyFins. It's only $3 a month. The 3 Yards Per Carry crew is very carefully moderating that stuff so it doesn't turn into the Twitter cesspool that we all love to hate. I know Duke has already basically sworn off Twitter. I don't see him tweeting anymore, so... Maybe one day we'll get a classic. It's 3rd and 10, time to punt. But not with this offense. I don't think it's going to be with this offense. So, anyway, like I said, PrizePicks.com, promo code 5. They'll match up to $100 on your deposit, and of course, Jerseys305.com. You want a classic You want a classic jersey? You want a good fresh merino jersey? Or maybe you're still a Tanistan, like in your heart of hearts, you can probably get a good classic jersey right there.
I think they have a Jay Fiedler jersey. I looked at it when you were watching the video earlier. So they have a Jay Fiedler jersey, I believe.
I'm sure they have Ricky Williams. I'm 1,000% sure of that. They don't have Ricky? No, they got to have Ricky somewhere.
I didn't see it, but I didn't look that close. I just saw the Jay Fiedler jersey.
So, yep, jerseys305.com, 10% off your order. That's going to be it. We will see you all next week, and there will be a next week of Pulse of Fins Nation. For myself, Duke, and Chad, thank you all so much for joining us. Have a good night.
Patrick Paul switched to a number in the 70s.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.